Hello, listeners, and welcome to the podcast. This week, our host Jeff comes to some epiphany about the sevens, but he's being cryptic about it and won't tell us what it is. He's selfishly saving it for his Arcanist's Corner, which is driving me nuts. So stay tuned for that and more this hour. Welcome to the Leyline Junction.
Joanne, Teresa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, today we're tackling the sevens, and I've got to tell you, as somebody learning this deck, I was really frustrated with the sevens. They seem to break a few rules, and there's some inconsistencies in the way people have been interpreting them. So, yeah. I was a little frustrated this week. In order to get into this, the sevens, from a numerology standpoint, tend to represent wisdom and action. So we're going to go ahead, we're going to jump right in. I think that in the order that we normally take these, the wands, the cups, the swords, and the pentacles, is going to be good for us this episode because the wands and the cups were a little more straightforward. The sword gets a little complicated, and then there's a lot of disagreement over the pentacles. So let's get the easy ones out of the way first, and we'll just take our normal route. So starting off with the seven of wands, we see a character in here. So again, looking at the Pamela Smith art, we have a character either standing on a hill or some other form of elevated ground, and he's in a battle stance with his staff, his wand. I've been getting some feedback from some of our listeners who are not familiar with the tarot at all, and I think we've pretty well stuck to wands, cups, swords, pentacles, but I do want to kind of start to recognize that sometimes wands are referred to as staves. Sometimes pentacles are referred to as coins. I don't know if that language is maybe a little more newbie friendly. I think I like the wands and the pentacles because it appeals to that mystical element here, but I think going forward, I might use them interchangeably a little. We'll see how annoying that gets.
I
Anyway,
think we'll know what it means though.
I mean,
And
it's,
it can vary from deck to deck also. Like, with Buffy, it's the stakes instead of the wands. In Arthurian legend, it's spears instead of wands. So
okay.
it's not hard and fast.
So in this case, though, the character in the card is clearly using this as a staff, and he is seems to be aggressively attacking people at a lower level than he is. We only see the tips of their staves; we don't see them. So this is our assertiveness card. Across the board, I do find that most people, when they see this card, they interpret this card as suggesting we may be in a position where we find ourselves needing to be as assertive. We recall that the wands, the staves, are our suit of inspiration, motivation, and imagination. So this is probably a situation where you're defending your reasoning, you're defending your thoughts. For a reversed meaning, this could suggest that you're being a little overly aggressive, but let's talk about some other things that we've observed. So, Joanne, Teresa, Let me ask you about your interpretations, your associations with this card. What can you tell us?
So as I'm looking at the Pamela Smith art, and again, I have the Radiant deck. I don't have the original. So it's basically just enhanced art. That's her art. You know, they haven't really changed anything. They've just refined it a little bit. And I don't know how the expression of the person on the regular deck looks, but this one looks, this man, he looks very stressed. He's pretty concerned with his position, even though he does have the high ground. And I'm a little annoyed that I can't see even just a hand on any of the other staves. So like when I initially look at this card and like there's a bunch of sticks sticking up there, like it's not clear to me that he's fighting people necessarily. Like upon first glance, you just see the other staffs there and not other people that he is probably fighting. Yes, he's on higher ground, but it's a little frustrating to me that you can't, that it's not definitive that he is fighting other people and six other people at that. I was always a little bit frustrated with this card because the deck that I typically read did not really give, the picture did not really give a good, it didn't really match the description that was written. So I'll read the description that was written for the Arthurian legend. Gaining the confidence of others, promoting unity, defending a noble vision, overcoming opposition, courage, strength, and success. To me, that sounds like you're pretty sure of your victory. So it, to me, it always kind of evoked a sense of you're gonna get this. You're gonna get through this. You're gonna come out on top. And for the Buffy deck, it's her looking at, she's basically looking at the shadow, at her shadow self, which is interesting to me. I don't necessarily know that it fits with the theme of the Seven of Wands, unless it's yourself that you are trying to convince of something, in which case you're working on your own self-esteem and building your own confidence up.
All right, Joanne, what can you tell us about your experience with this card?
So it is a defense card. You know, you're defending someone or something like that. It's interesting because my one deck that I've used for 25 years. So the man is kind of like the Smith deck is defending, but you also see the shadows of the others that are coming at him with the other staffs. And you see his outline, you see the staff's outline, but you see it's clearly a defense stance. But any card that I have seen with regarding the seven of wands has always been that defense.
So that card is a little more definitive as far as opponents. There are other opponents upon first glance.
Right.
I kind of like that.
My moon deck, there's nobody is in the car, you know, you don't see anybody. What it is you see one long tree and then around it, small, you know, smaller, thinner tree, not smaller, but they're thinner. And it's a forest and you can see that it's kind of putting up a defense. It's defending that forest. So to me, yeah, it's always been across my decks has always been that defense.
Okay. And so that first deck that you were referring to was the Renaissance deck?
Yes.
So I know that I've said before, I'm really uncertain about small details in the card and background art, but there is one detail in here that I'm really curious about that definitely seems deliberate. Teresa, looking at the Radiant deck, mm-hmm. What can you tell me about this character's shoes?
Oh, he's got one boot and one shoe. They're different.
They're clearly mismatched.
Yeah.
One is an ankle high boot or an ankle high shoe. The other comes halfway up his calf. I take it we haven't noticed that before.
No. Nope. And now I'm looking.
No, because I don't really like this card. Although I will let you know that Buffy has matching shoes.
Okay, good.
I would be a little upset if she.
I'm like looking at the shoes now on the other card, going, oh my goodness.
Okay, moving on to the cups then. This is another card that I have found a pretty good consistency in what I am finding, but I got very upset about this. I have questions, and I'm going to throw those at you and test you a little here. Again, our sevens are representing wisdom and action. The cups tend to be the suit of relationships and emotion, although I'm not seeing that really here. What we do see is we see a character looking up into the sky at seven cups displayed in front of him. And each one of these cups contains some very interesting or attractive something. We see jewels, we see a castle, we see a victory wreath, several other things. And this person seems to be choosing from them. Interpretations that I have seen simply say, you have a lot of choices in front of you, so you have a decision to make here. For a reversed meaning, I've only seen mention of don't necessarily trust what's in front of you, but that was kind of uncommon. So again, the thing here is examine the possibilities and make a wise decision. Joanne, Teresa, what can you add to that?
So the many choices make sense. Again, you see the cups, there's choices in front of you. It's also, to me, illusion as well. Be careful that you're not making that wrong choice based off of maybe some unrealistic fantasy or illusion that you think might happen, is what I see with that card. And just, again, across my decks, it's very, very similar.
There's some interesting aspects of at least the Radiant deck. I don't know how it looks on the original, but under the wreath, is there a skull inside the cup?
Oh, it does look like a skull.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but it also has, you know, a snake crawling out of another one. Yeah. You have a dragon. Yeah, it's being careful of those choices, yeah.
Right, but it also, that particular cup makes me think of being wary that what looks good on the outside doesn't necessarily mean a favorable outcome. It may be an initial win that you think you have when you first get it or when you first choose it, but that there is a consequence down the line that could be unfavorable, I guess, to put it that way, or to continue on that line of thinking. But also, I've seen this as an unrealistic expectation card, and not necessarily because you didn't do your research, or not necessarily because you did do your research and it's out of your hands. It would depend on the other cards that surround it for me reading it. I think when I get this particular card, I typically pull at least another card just to get a little more direction into which way it is pointing or guiding, as far as like, is this an unrealistic expectation that you have just started kind of putting in your head and you need to do more research before making a choice? Or is this a blind leap of faith that you're just going to have to take and just keep in mind that you are not able to make an informed decision?
So this would be a judging a book by its cover card.
I think it's a warning not to judge a book by its cover. Definitely. And I think it's a warning to try to gather more information if possible.
Okay, here's where my question came in. We know that the cups, so we're looking at the Seven of Cups. The cups are our suit of emotions and relationship. We also remember that the last card we discussed, our wand, our staff, that is typically the suit of inspiration, motivation, and imagination. And I really needed to know, why isn't this card a wand? It feels very much like it's got, you know, it's talking about this choice. It is fairly reminiscent of the Two of Wands, where we had this decision to make, except in the Two of Wands, it was just the choice between two different options. And here we have seven options, but it's still making that choice, getting that inspiration, taking those first steps towards which goal. And I was just really confused by this.
I mean, this could relate to relationship or beginning of relationship, especially now. Like, I don't know, maybe they were that psychic in all that time, knowing that one day Tinder was going to come along, swiping left and swiping right. I don't know. But I think there are decisions, like in relationship, we make decisions, but I don't think it's a hard and fast rule that it has to fit into a very specific box to get a certain message across. I think that, yes, it can be. It can refer to relationship. It can refer to dating around or seeing maybe you are in a committed relationship and the grass is looking greener in other places other than your own spot. And you think that maybe it might be time to make a different decision. You could move it into that direction if you really wanted to stick with the relationship aspects of cups. But I think that from a broader perspective, bigger picture perspective, depending on what other cards are surrounding it, what story, what movie you're getting from the reading and not just specifically one card, I think that's more important.
Well, it did lead me, though, to another question that I want to ask you. I mean, I don't want to be so stubborn as to say, you know, this can't be in the suit of cups. And what I want to ask, and I know specifically, like, I've seen a lot of literature lately that talks about the distinction we in our society make between, like, love and money. Right. And a lot of this literature is saying that's a really artificial distinction, that both of these things are so intertwined, we really need to stop talking about them separately. And I think the same thing definitely goes for a lot of what we find in this deck. We definitely see a lot of bleed over, right? You know, we've got, you know, if we have the wands dealing with imagination, inspiration, that is very similar to the swords, which deal with thought, and the swords, which also deal with communication, is very similar to the relationships. And my question comes really when, if a subject comes to you and asks you a question about love, and financial cards keep popping up, or vice versa, if the subject asks you a question about finances and all these relationship cards keep popping up, how do you typically handle that in a reading?
Well, relationship is coming up. It means they're going to, you know, maybe meet that billionaire of theirs. Well, that's what I'm thinking. But again, it depends on what's around the card. So, I mean, if we got something, you know, a cup and a sword card together, it could be as simple as you're going to meet that person and you're going to have that intuition and you have that, you know, that it could be that it's passion at first sight or something like that. Or it could be, for that example, you know, it's you might meet this person, but you need to be prepared to not have the best outcome. It depends on the cards around it. And they do bleed into each other. I think they, you know, wands can be inspirational and so can cups. It just depends.
It's a very broad question for a very specific possibility. Like if someone is asking about relationship and they're really hyper focused on finding the love of their life and career card, like pentacles keep coming up for them, I might suggest to them, I'm like, I know you're really wanting to know about love and relationship, but I'm almost wondering if maybe you need to focus on you yourself and ensuring your own independence and making sure that you're good before bringing another person into the mix. That's just an example that, because I'm actually thinking of a friend that I've read for before that I would probably have given that kind of a reading to. But on the flip side, you know, just to speak to your question about what if they're asking about career and relationship, you know, cups keep coming up. And to that point, again, this is broadly, maybe it's time for that person to just make sure that they're not losing connection with people along the way to their, you know, financial success. Like, is a big house and nice cars going to keep you warm at night? You know, if you're living in this empty house with no connection to people, is it going to be worth it? It would depend. It would depend on the spread and the questions.
I guess if I can kind of rephrase the question, so let's take an example where we've been asked a question about relationships, and a pentacle comes up, a card of coins comes up. Would you treat that as though it's equating relationships to money, or would that really be, I understand you want to know about relationships, but we need to talk about money. Did I phrase that right? Does that make sense?
It does, but I'd need it to be more specific than just saying they're asking about relationships. What about relationships?
Well, like, so let's go the other way. Instead of being more specific about the question, maybe I can be more specific about the card, right? Like, so let's say they ask, when am I going to find love, right? And the four or five of pentacles comes up. And we discussed in previous weeks that these are charity cards. These are cards about being aware of other people's financial situation. But would we translate that to, okay, I understand you're looking for love, but maybe we should look at the love we're giving, the love we're sharing. So taking that whole charity thing, being aware of other people's feelings, or would we say, okay, I understand you're questioning when you're going to look for love. Maybe charity, like actual financial, like actual monetary charity might be a good way to find love, right? Like go volunteer at this shelter or that kitchen, or just being generous with money. So would we treat money metaphorically, or would we really stick to this is a card about money?
No. I would be like, well, hey, let me tell you, something might be happening. You know, then if something like one of the charity cards, so like the four of cups, or no, four of pentacles, if that's coming up, I would say, well, I'm seeing maybe more charitable acts might lead you to that person. But right now, what I'm seeing is that you need to give of yourself. You need to be more charitable. You know, that is what I am seeing right now.
So non-metaphorical.
No. But I
Teresa,
guess
you're looking a little uncomfortable with that answer. What are you
she
thinking?
is.
I wouldn't. I like digging in further to get a little more information. So I would pull clarifying cards, but I also don't. If I pull just one card, like if I'm just kind of being a little bit flippant with that moment, or it's kind of after the main reading and they're kind of asking a follow-up question, and I just pull one card as like a, well, let's see what they say. And if it's not a clear answer to me, I'll pull another card or two to clarify what it is. But I also feel like if it's not making sense, like if it's a completely random card that doesn't, it just doesn't jive with it at all, and I pull some clarifying cards and those also do not give any more clarification or any direct link, there are times I think that maybe you just aren't supposed to know. Maybe you aren't supposed to make an informed decision. You know, we're always, that's part of why people are so fascinated with so-called fortune telling or guidance. And, you know, yes, as much guidance as we can get sometimes is a comfort, but we are living this human existence, and sometimes we're not supposed to know what's behind door number 1, 2, and 3.
And let's talk about the Seven of Swords. The Seven of Swords, the card depicts a character, a male character, looking like he's trying to be a little sneaky. He has five swords in his hand and he is carrying them away, leaving two swords behind him. He is not, so there's no castle in the background, there's no house in the background. There are, it looks like circus tents in the background or some type of temporary caravan thing. But either way, he's sneaking away with five of the swords, leaving two of them behind. So I do get a small range of interpretations here, but essentially it does mostly boil down to alluding to deceptive tactics. I've got a few sources that suggest you should be wary in case someone is lying to you or otherwise being deceptive. I have a couple of sources that say you may be being selfish in what you're doing. And I've got a couple sources that say you might need to be a little more cunning in your approach to these matters. So those are definitely three different perspectives on this, but I think it does kind of still boil down to issues with deception. So, Joanne, Teresa, take it away.
So the artwork on the Radiant deck of the Smith art, he is looking very pleased with himself. I don't love how he's holding the blades. Like, you think you're being so sneaky, but you're leaving a trail of blood behind you because your fingers are getting all caught
Ha
up. It does make me feel like we're dealing with someone who is working against you behind your back, that you're not, it tells me to pay attention to everyone around you and not be caught off guard. I suppose that I think that I would need a clarifying card next to it that would kind of guide me to think that the person that I'm actually reading is the one who's being a little bit sneaky about something, and to be careful that they're not fooling themselves as well. But it would depend on the other cards surrounding that. If the other cards around that were not leading me towards the reader, then I would automatically consider this card to mean beware, person who I am reading, beware of the people around you. For in the Buffy deck, the Seven of Swords is Ethan Rain carrying the five swords away, although they're scythes, and he's holding the handles that are not sharp. So I'm a little better with that particular art depiction. The Arthurian Legend deck, which is again my primary deck for the last couple of decades, is going to turn all of this on its head because it does not follow the traditional meaning at all. the card artwork, it looks to me like it is Arthur pulling the sword from the stone. That's not deceptive to me, unless I'm missing a piece of Arthurian legend.
Kind of stealing it.
Yeah, maybe. But also the description written in the book for this particular deck, it says, the beginning of a new enterprise, ambition and enthusiasm, new direction, hope and perseverance, favorable omens. There's nothing about deception. There's nothing about sneakiness in this.
Or selfishness.
Right. It's this, in this particular deck, it has a positive connotation. So, I mean, I think that's a good example of you'll get different interpretations or different directions depending on the deck. Sometimes they will align with what is traditionally known, like what the traditional description is. Sometimes they'll take their own journey. And but I think that this also points to the idea that it depends on what you're drawn to, what deck you're drawn to read, based on the reader, and it's about you being open to pulling the deck that fits the reading that you're going to be doing. But also, I think, again, we have how many cards in this deck? 78? There's another deception card in here somewhere.
Are you thinking of one in
No,
particular?
Not right now.
Okay.
Not at the moment, but...
It's interesting. I was looking at suggestions on what the Seven of Swords, you know, means. One of the things they said was turning a blind eye. So deception, trickery, all that, but turning a blind eye. And I thought that was kind of an interesting take on the Seven of Swords, which again has always been that deception and trickery. You know, you see the man stealing and he's walking away and he has that little slight smile, and but turning a blind eye, I don't think I've ever seen the Seven of Swords.
So that was the Labyrinthos app. That was
Labyrinthos app, yes.
That was done by Tina Gong, the same woman who did the deck that I keep using. And
yes.
I am using her book. She didn't actually mention that in the book. So
it's on the app.
That's cool.
Okay, so I got a new deck today. So I got this new deck. It arrived at the house today, complete with an opinion from my boyfriend who doesn't understand the need for more than one deck. But anyway, so this new deck is called The Light Seer's Tarot, and it is by Chris Ann. I feel like this is a really great beginner's deck. The artwork is very intuitive. It makes a lot of sense, at least all the cards that I've looked at so far. Again, this is a brand new deck to me, so I still have to get to know it a little bit. But so far, I'm very, very impressed with the artwork and the feel and the descriptions. But the Seven of Swords for the Light Seer's Tarot, it shows a hooded person sneaking away with crow feathers in a knapsack on his back. He has a knife in his hand. He's trying to sneak away, walking along a large boulder under the light of a full moon. So not very sneaky, but trying real hard. And then there's a murder of crows squawking about this guy sneaking away with their feathers, is what it seems like. And then there's a cityscape in the distance, like a skyline. It's a pretty cool looking card.
I love the crow that's like looking into the camera.
Yeah. He's like, do you see this guy, look at this guy stealing our feathers. But let me read the description too, because like I feel like this is a pretty good description. So she has it Light Seer and Shadow Seer. So I guess upright and reversed. So Light Seer description, deception or betrayal, taking only what's needed. the universe bearing witness to true intentions, getting away with something, being strategic, being grateful for the resources you have, moving silently and quickly. And I kind of like that description of like taking only what's needed, because even in like the traditional Smith art, he's leaving two behind. He's taking five with him, and maybe he doesn't need a full five, but he is not being completely greedy and grabbing all of it. He's, whether through strategy or necessity, he's leaving some of it behind. He's not taking all of it with him. And I like the part that says the universe bearing witness to true intentions. I really love that, because that energy is there. Like, whether you think, I think you're fooling yourself if you think that you are truly being deceptive in anything that you're being deceptive about. You can't fool everybody. So the shadow seer, so basically I assume this is for the reversed meaning, should you read it, lying to yourself or to others, a need for perspective and honesty, secrets, something stolen, taking more than your fair share, being held back by imposter syndrome. Interesting. So she goes on, traditionally, this card warns us that we must be on the lookout for deception, thievery, and betrayal. While we can sometimes find ourselves the victim of someone else's deceit, it's also a nudge to act in alignment with our own highest morality. It's also a nudge to act in alignment with our own highest morality. Be sure you are being honest with yourself about the nature of your reality right now. Sometimes we pretend that everything is okay, or that we are doing the best we can, even when we're not. Sometimes this shows up as recklessness or as an avoidance of responsibilities. Take only what's needed and remember that no excuse outweighs your ability to act from a place of love and integrity. You cannot deceive your own heart, and the universe will always bear witness to your truest intentions. For you alone and vulnerable under the light of the full moon, the only thing that matters is the truth. Move forward with a lightness of conscience to guide you.
And I'm sorry, did you tell us who did that deck?
Chris Ann.
All right. Thank you very much. But then we need to move on to the card that I think gave me the most trouble, the Seven of Pentacles. And this card depicts a male character who is tending to what I believe is a garden, potentially harvesting these giant coins on coming from a bush. And he's pausing in his work and looking down. He does not look very happy, but he is looking down at his work and he is pondering something. So I've got a lot of different readings on this card. Some of them, or two of them at least, are diametrically opposed. And I think before I get into what I found in my research, I'd actually like to ask you guys to go first and tell us what your experience with this card has been.
So when I look at that, when I look at the Smith art on this card, so again, I also have the Radiant deck. So his expression is a little more refined, but I don't think he necessarily looks unhappy. He looks a little bit bored. And to me, that resonates a little bit, because, you know, when you are growing a garden, metaphorically and literally, yes, there's a lot of work. There's the weeding and the prepping and the fertilizing and the planting and everything. And then there's the maintaining and making sure that it's well watered and everything. But once it starts growing and you've maintained it well enough, now it's more of a waiting game of letting it come to fruition, of letting it, you know, finish growing to where you can harvest it. So that's kind of what I'm getting from this card, is that you've put in the work. Now is the time to just kind of pay attention and make sure that the momentum is still moving in the right direction, but that you can take your foot off the gas a little bit and coast a little bit. With the Arthurian Legend deck, which again is the deck that I used to read most of the time, that holds true as well. Bounty, wealth, and ingenuity, the steady methodical removal of obstacles, so perseverance.
I think perseverance is the key word for that. Because, it's you're working hard. You have that goal in mind, but you're going to have to work for it. And it's going to be a hard road. It's not going to be an easy road. That's how I've always seen the card and how I have always interpreted is the perseverance and the hard work to get to that goal that you want.
So
Nightmare Before Christmas only has presents in here. That's the card is seven presents. But again, it's the hard work Jack put in for that reward of being Santa. And part of being Santa is the presents.
Okay. Well, thank you. I'm glad that I asked you to go first on this. I did have several authors that I was looking at who did share your perspective on this and talked about patience and reaping the reward of a job well done. And I think for the other perspectives, again, I did find several wildly different perspectives, and I don't think I really want to go into those at this time. Let's just say I read from several authors that did not seem to like gardening. Let's just leave it at that. This has been a messy episode, but I loved it.
I know.
I thought this was cool, and
we persevered. We persevered and got to the end.
So yes, I do have a little bit to say in the Arcanist Corner today. So please keep listening. Also, we've never really said out loud, make sure you listen beyond the credits, because we got cool things in that little last 2 minutes. Hopefully you've noticed. I know a lot of people, I've spoken to a couple people who did notice, who did listen to it, and I have spoken to a couple people already who just shut it off when the credits started going, and I had to tell them, no, you need to go back and listen. So all right, that being said, Joanne Teresa, thank you so much for again joining me on this podcast. I hope you will join us again when we discuss the eights.
Nope, seven was my limit. I'm kidding. We'll be back.
Greetings, travelers, and welcome once again to the Arcanist's Corner. So early in this episode, I mentioned that as a learner of the tarot, the sevens here did kind of frustrate me. And throughout today's episode, I talked a lot already about the problems I had with each one of the individual cards. But I do want to touch quickly on the problem I had with the sevens as a whole and the subsequent lesson that I learned because of that. And that is, the numerology does point us towards the sevens representing wisdom and telling us something about wisdom. And studying these cards, I wasn't necessarily seeing that in how they've been interpreted. And I kept asking the question, where's the wisdom? What is this telling us about wisdom? And looking at each individual card, I don't really think I could see it, but looking at the sevens as a whole, I think when I stepped back and looked at how the sevens were behaving, the fact that they weren't necessarily following the rules kind of became where I found the wisdom. Through this process, I will admit I've been looking for that round peg to put in the round hole and the square peg to put in the square hole. And I know I've been highly focused on that. And I think the wisdom of the sevens told me they don't need to follow the rules all the time. You know what? I have a little more to say about that, but I did actually tell Joanne and Teresa about this revelation of mine. And Teresa actually had a lot to say about this. So I kind of want to play this conversation for you, both because of what she said and because she relates it to Shakespeare. And I'm kind of a sucker for analogies dealing with Shakespeare. So I have to include this in the show. But I do talk a little more about what I was thinking, what I was learning in this conversation. So I'm just going to go ahead and play that for you right here.
I know that you've said that you approach this from an academic lens, and I think that some of the like because you're looking at it from a traditional academic lens, that may not have prepared you for the subject of tarot, which is a lot more ambiguous and a lot more up for interpretation. Just doing this podcast has given me such a it's forced me to look at the tarot from new perspectives that I haven't looked at it from before. And I realize that there's a nice metaphor that we can use for this, and that's tarot is an art. It's like Shakespeare on the page, but what you see at the Globe in London is going to be different from the production that you see at Stratford-upon-Avon is going to be different from Shakespeare in the Park in Central Park, is going to be different from shit-faced Shakespeare, which is my favorite. But you know, it's just the words are the same on the page. The play has survived centuries, but a production of Romeo and Juliet is going to be different depending on the theater and the actors and the director. And I feel like looking at tarot in new perspectives that I have these last few months, I feel like I've kind of been on a journey of looking at it from another way that I never realized was possible to look at it. But I think that it is a more interpretive, more intuitive, kind of endeavor than I think that you were considering in the beginning.
So
It can
it's
kind of,
still based on a text.
yeah, it can still, I mean,
You know, I was sitting here looking for wisdom. The sevens are supposed to represent wisdom. I was looking for where is the wisdom in here? And I was struggling to find it until I started to think about kind of the meta conversation and how, because I listening back to some of the other Arcanist corners that I've recorded, I do sound really stiff, really stubborn. I mean, on the one hand, I consider myself a creative person, right? I write fiction, I write poetry, but I know I sound very, very tight-laced, and
No.
that's not how I think of myself.
Well, it's
But
because it's something that you don't know, and you went into this thinking that it would be a good we'll all learn together, but it's not a subject that goes into the typical syllabus that you're accustomed to putting it in. So it's going to be different. So
well,
you kind of came into something that is different from your usual.
and the I think when I was asking the question, where is the wisdom in the swords? And looking at the way I felt, the cups didn't adhere to the rules, and there was no consensus with the pentacles. The wisdom I got out of that was, I need to let go. I need to. Yeah, again, I normally think of myself as one who's good at going with the flow, but I have not been doing that here. I've been digging my heels in. And so I need to, the wisdom says, go with the flow. And to me, the sevens are always going to be, they're always going to have that.
Lang Lang Junction is hosted and produced by Jeff Sternstein. The guests this week were me, Joanne Beth, and Teresa Bergato. If you want to support the show, the best thing you could do is to rate us and post a review for our show wherever you get your podcasts. You can also visit us and drop us a line on Instagram at Leyline Junction, no spaces or underscores. Ooh, or maybe he's wearing shoes where the sock, you know, when the sock light slides down into your shoe. And then, God, that just made his day a whole lot worse. No wonder he's fighting people. He's like, guys, I'm already having a crappy day. My sock's hidden in my shoe. Come on.
Hate when that happens.
Hate that.
Back in the early days when I was first starting out and I was helping with a charity ball for a friend, a Halloween charity ball, and she asked if I would read cards, and I said sure. I had no idea what this thing was going to look like. I didn't know the scale. I didn't know that there were four or five other readers that were going to be there, and I just thought I was providing for fun, come in, you know, if you're curious, come in and get a little reading from this naive girl in the corner. I didn't know there were four or five other people, and they were all charging like $10 a reading. And I was like, I'm not going to charge. Like, well, you have to charge because everybody else is charging. I'm like, oh, who else is here? Like, they're like other readers. I'm like, oh no. Okay. I was not confident in my skill. Like, what was the question? We were starting to settle into more conversation, but then they were like, oh, what are we going to have for dinner tomorrow? Ask the cards. So like, I'm like, oh, okay, I don't know. Like, how is that going to tell us what we're having for dinner tomorrow? I pulled. So it was the Arthurian legend deck that I had with me. I threw a card down, and the pages in the Arthurian legend deck are animals. And it was a fish. I was like, it looks like we're having fish tomorrow. And they were like, it is Friday and we haven't had fish for a while. We might be having fish. And we did. It did end up being fish the next day. Like, one of the girls was like, the card's new. It was so funny.
It's the same app. I wonder if I can find my app. Hold on.
You know what I discovered about that app?
Yes.
You do know?
No, I don't. I said, no what? No what? Sorry. No what?
You can't fool everybody.
Every single day, I so want to take my camera out in class and all these students who feel like they're getting away with something by looking at their phones or something. It's like, you know, you're looking at me like you're doing something wrong, right?
you should just get a whole bunch of Seven of Swords, like cheapy ones, and just give it to them. Like, you get the Seven of Swords today in Boom. Class.
Yeah.
Hearing myself talk, like, I was like, oh wow, like in my head, that's not how that sounded. But like, okay.
If you would like to hear more insane ramblings from me, go ahead and wait till the end. Me?
No, Teresa.
Oh, thank God.
I just saw like all the blood drain out of her face.
I'm like, dude.
Jeff, we're not friends anymore. I won't be on your podcast. You can forget it.